back to the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line still could get in, 251-343-0106. We can pick up your text in the next couple of segments, so keep them coming. Joey Clark coming up in the 10 o'clock hour from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, and my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley J., will make time for us in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. Joining us now, he's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District for the Republican nomination special election on August 11th. But Austin Sidwell joins us on the line. Austin, good morning. How are
you? Hey, Jeff. How are you? I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. Well, let's start here. How's the campaign going?
Oh, it's going well. You know, we're in the final stretch. We're getting out there letting people know that there's still a special primary on August 11th. And that's the biggest thing with all the confusion, all the changes to this race, you know, having a primary, then a runoff, and then a new special election. The primary goal is just to educate voters and get them out to vote.
Yeah, and in these low turnout events, I mean, it becomes, I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen any polls or anything like that, but these low turnout events, those percentages are less relevant. It's just raw vote. So it's just get out the vote, I would think.
That's exactly right. I mean, we're expecting, if you go based off of a runoff, anywhere from 7 to 10% would be great. That means that we can go out and actually, you know, get in front of every single voter that we need to win this race. So it really gives a grassroots campaign like mine an opportunity to make a difference. So I urge anyone out there who doubts whether or not, you know, we can take on the big guys to get out there and vote, because your vote's going to matter, you know, 3-4x in this race.
Well, let's, you know, and let's talk about, let's do this. Some of our listeners might not be familiar with you, but just talk a little bit about yourself before we proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up here in Baldwin County. I went to Foley High School, went to the United States Air Force Academy after that, spent 12 years flying helicopters in the Air Force to include combat search and rescue, and then 6 years at Fort Rucker as an instructor. In my time in the Air Force, I got an MBA. I actually started law school while I was active duty, just graduated from Jones School of Law up in Montgomery back in December. After I left the Air Force in 23, I came to run my family's security company here locally. Been doing that for the last 3 years.
And now you've decided to take the daunting leap into politics. What has led you to that decision?
Well, first of all, I think this is where God wants me to be. Second of all, you know, you take a look at the state of the world right now, the state of our politics, and I've got 3 kids, a 15-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And there's no guarantee that America is going to survive, turbulent times unless good people stand up and, stand on those true conservative values. And I didn't see that out of our representatives, candidates in this election. And, you know, when you see a problem, then if you don't stand up and raise your hand and take on that problem, then what are you doing? So that's what I decided to do. I think we need a voice of the people as a representative in our Congress. And that's what I'm here to do.
And we'll get into some current topics here, but you're elected to Congress. What is your what are you going to try to make a priority?
Well, I think we have to make a priority Social Security. You saw a couple of weeks ago, by 2032, the largest Social Security fund is going to be insolvent. And I think that that's a huge deal. You know, we keep seeing the federal government, you know, throw money at that problem, print more money and throw it at it. And it's at a point now where it's not going to continue unless we fundamentally change how we look at Social Security. And people see it as an entitlement, but, you know, you and I pay into it every day. My dad's been paying into it his entire career, both as a small business owner and, you know, out of his own paycheck. And he's not going to see that money for retirement. We're not going to see that money for retirement if we don't look at the system and figure out how to keep Congress's hands out of that pot of money.
Yeah, well, you know, one would think they'd probably just inflate their way out of it or something like that. But that's going to have an impact on the overall economy. I mean, whatever the solution may be, it's unsustainable.
It's unsustainable as it is. And you've seen some decent ideas across the years, but no one's been willing to budge on it because it's not a politically sexy thing to do. Right. You don't hear politicians talk about Social Security because, you know, it's it's difficult. It's difficult to get out there and say, you know, we're going to protect the interests of the people that are currently under the program while also recreating something that's sustainable for the future. It's going to be difficult, but we've got to have people up there willing to talk about it.
Well, it's just this, though, that, you know, every time someone tries to do, I mean, you get grandma getting pushed off a cliff in a wheelchair, or you get this just like high speed, very aggressive demagoguery about, you know, Republicans one that or whoever it may be, if a Democrat were to come along and say they want to take your Social Security away and give it to rich people or something. It's just, that's what always makes it tough, because it's just too easy to get to people's fears.
It is, but I mean, look at the current proposals for fixes. They're either going to raise the age or they're going to increase the payroll tax. Being a small business guy myself, you know, with inflation and everything else that's gone on in the economy, it's hard enough to find people to work right now. And, you know, adding a percentage or a percentage and a half to the payroll tax is going to crush small businesses. We can't do that. And what are we going to do? Increase the age to 75? 76. I mean, at some point, it just doesn't make any sense. We're not giving people what we promised them. So we're going to have to fundamentally look at how we do it. One of the things that I've worked on is a piece of legislature that captures some of the revenue off of the data that these tech companies are pulling from us, and essentially taxes that directly for Social Security. There's money out there to put back into the fund and to fund it appropriately and turn it into a 401k based system where it's tied to you and the government can't pull from it when it needs money.
Joined by Alston Sidwell, he's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District for the Republican nomination. The election on August 11th. Austin, let's talk about what's going on in the world. I guess the top of the list now, Iran, the memorandum of understanding sort of collapsing. I kind of feel like, I mean, it was inevitable. I mean, I just, dealing with this right now is you have a bad actor. You just have somebody who's just not a trustworthy actor. But on the other hand, you got to figure something out to get Strait of Hormuz open, or we're going to feel the crunch domestically.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this the last time that you and I spoke on here. I mean, okay, would I have gone into there? No, but I support the president's decision to take out a regime like that in Iran. But what's the plan? I think I said this before. If we didn't have a solution by July 4th, what were we going to do? Well, that's come and gone. So I, what are we getting out of it? Whether it's, you know, the global economic interest of controlling the Strait of Hormuz, we didn't get that. Doesn't look like that's viably on the table. But how long are we going to stay over there and bomb these people and get nothing in return? So that's all. I just want to know, you know, what's the plan going forward? If they give us an end game that makes sense, okay, cool. But I'm tired of sending, you know, our men and women over there to fight in these wars that don't benefit America. While we're sitting over here, you know, the highest affordability costs we've ever seen in America. You've got job numbers that are looking worse and worse every single quarter. And the economy is getting more and more sluggish here. We're moving towards a recession while we're focused elsewhere. It's time to focus back on America, you know, the essence of that America First movement. And we need to do it before the primaries, or we're going to lose the House and the Senate. The midterms.
Right, because that's what I was going to say. I mean, people may not be, like, very tuned in. I mean, unfortunately, it's just the reality of our society in America that they're not watching the news blow by blow. But they're going to know when they go to fill up at the gas tank and they're paying in excess of $5 a gallon for, you know, regular unleaded, that this is not going like we had hoped. And there's going to be repercussions, and the repercussions are going to be you're going to get a Democrat majority and maybe the House and the Senate.
And unlike the Republicans, when the Democrats get the majority, they move the country to the left. You know, I've said this throughout my campaign. When we have the majority, we don't do anything. And we haven't really done much congressionally throughout President Trump's second term. And what's going to happen when American people see a stagnant government, they choose the other side. So we have got to get working before the midterms and to create some momentum. And I think the first step of that is to get us out of Iran.
Yeah, what does success look like? That's never been quite clear to me because, okay, we have an objective we're trying to achieve. What is that objective? And it went from taking the nuclear option off the table, but now it's shifted. And this is what's problematic. it's allowing shipping traffic through, you know, the Strait of Hormuz. How do you, you know, like, how are you going to pull that off, especially now with drone technology and whatever armaments Iran has left? Can you wipe that out? And that doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah. And I mean, what's the economic repercussions of, you know, truly going after their infrastructure? I mean, we can do it. We can cripple them. But the problem with that is then we have a Strait of Hormuz that's not actually producing anything. So it may be open, but it's not going to produce anything. So it's kind of, you know, I'm with you. What's the end goal here? If we want to control the Strait of Hormuz, we've got the GCC allied right now. Put the GCC with Israel there and let them handle the Strait. But it didn't seem like that was the goal. So, I'm with you. Show us what the end game is and let us get there. And let's get there fast.
This is from a texter here. We talked about this with one of your opponents, Jerry Carl, yesterday. The problems with the labor market and workforce participation and figuring out ways. I mean, you know, the big business seems to be relying on a lot of, migrant labor, be it legal or illegal. But the question here, I would be extremely curious what Austin's opinion of the current labor market is and getting, I guess the main thrust of the question is getting people off the couch and to work.
I mean, we're still coming off the heels of COVID, unfortunately. You would think that this far, you know, away from it, that the government would learn their lesson and stop paying people to sit at home. But that's not just the federal government. It's state governments across the country. We're still, I mean, the welfare system is so full of fraud. It's so full of government bureaucracy. I mean, it moves at the pace of a snail. So we're sitting here and we're watching these governmental processes go on that just don't actually facilitate getting people off of welfare and getting them back into the seats of all these open jobs.
Yeah.
And so I think DOGE was a big plus towards that. Let's figure out the fraud, waste, and abuse in these welfare systems first. Let's get the people who don't deserve it off, and then we can figure out how to restructure those programs to keep them from getting back on in the future.
Well, there's also like the sort of, we have a social safety net, and it's being abused in society. And do you ever talk to people? There's like these economic development experts or whatever you want to call them. There's two impediments here. And impediment number one is people who are able-bodied adults can't pass a drug test. How do you rectify that? Then the second problem you hear is, well, we have a deficiency in childcare that you can't go to work because you don't have anywhere for your children to go while you're at work. So there's like these barriers to entry and figuring those out. Now, I mean, is it just have a government program for this? I don't know, but I think there's like some cultural problems and maybe there's just not a government solution.
There's not a whole lot of a government solution. I mean, there's a few there. You know, supporting the family unit would be kind of that non-government solution. I believe, you know, you should be able to raise a family in a single income household, right? Going back to the government fix, get the costs down, you know, get it to where, you know, you can have a dad out there working, busting his butt while mom's at home with the kids or vice versa. I don't care how that structure is for your family, but you should be able to raise a family on one income in America. But the costs have gotten so high because we keep printing money and keep buying our own debt. And this continual cycle keeps going that drives up inflation and makes it to where families can't do that. So in order to even survive and make your house payment and make food bills, you've got to have both parents working. Well, then you go and run into the cost of daycare. It's absurd right now. I know you've got young kids. I don't know if your kids are in daycare. We've had ours when I was in the military in Dothan. And there's really, it offset the cost of my wife working. So it's like, okay, well, we take that cost out, we bring her home, and it actually was better. Now, that doesn't help the families that just have to get out there and have two people working, but the government's not the solution there. We need to get churches active again in our communities, and they can help pick up the weight of that social safety net. That's how it was originally structured. The church was supposed to take this role and responsibility in the communities, but once we separated out of the church, out of our politics, they're not providing that support anymore.
Yeah, we've gotten more secular as a country, but even the church, and this is a complaint of mine regularly, is that a lot of times church steers clear of politics. They don't want to dabble in it. But then some of these things that the government is encouraging that are antithetical to these biblical values, this biblical worldview, they need to speak out against it. There's a real reluctance to from the clergy because they don't want to turn away parishioners they see as dabbling in politics as something akin to maybe like an idolatry or so. I don't know what it is, but the church is really like they're taking the separation of church and state and they're sitting it out.
Well, and this is going to make some people upset, and that's okay. It is idolatry. The church has chosen a tax-free paycheck instead of actually being involved in society. It goes back to 1954 when the Johnson Amendment got attached to the tax code. Essentially, what that did is made it illegal for a 501c3, i.e. a charitable organization like a church, to be active in politics. It was never meant to be like that. The government did that, and then the welfare state of the government grew, and church's involvement in society decreased. I mean, there is a marker in history when that started to happen in this country. It's 1954.
It was, right? The world poverty and that everything in that era sort of led us to where we are today.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things I go back overall in the campaign. You know, you have people in this race that, you know, promise pet projects, promise money coming back to the district. I am sick and tired of the federal government expansion. I'm a true conservative, like really the only true conservative in this race from the stance of I do not want the federal government expanding anymore. We've seen what it's given us over the last 70 years. Having more federal money in our communities is not a good thing. It gives them more control over us, and it ultimately, you know, corrupts the balance that is, you know, your local everyday citizen and what the federal government's role is. But we don't talk about that as Republicans anymore because we spend money just as bad as the Democrats do.
Also, we got to leave it there. Folks want to find out more about you or your campaign. Where can they look?
Yeah, you can find us on all social media, Sid Well for Congress. You can also go to our website, SidWellForCongress.com. And I'll also put a plug in. We are not funded by, you know, the establishment, by a bunch of super PACs and PACs. We're funded by people in South Alabama. So if you can go on, if you want to vote for me, great. We need your vote on August 11th. We also need your donations. We survive on small dollar donations. So go to our website, SidWellForCongress.com, and donate if you can.
Awesome. We'll talk again before the big day, but thanks for hopping on this morning.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. All thank
right.
you.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.